Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Sarah Gonzalez, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Parenting, you're doing it wrong. Except my mom. My mom's got it down. But my next guest takes particular issue with the verb form of the word and hopes to lessen parental anxiety with her new book. Allison Gopnik is a developmental psychologist at the University of California, Berkeley, and is author of The Gardener and the Carpenter, What the New Science of Child Development Tells Us About the Relationship Between Parents and Children. You might have seen a recent New York Times Sunday Review essay, What Babies Know About Physics and Foreign Languages, that was adapted from her book. Professor Gopnik, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be here.
So the main thesis of your book, I gather, is that we're in this odd position of knowing that kids need to learn more and learn more faster, earlier, and also being in this place where we don't really know how best to teach them. Is that correct?
Well, I think the point is that children do learn. And most of the book is about this amazing science that's come out over the last 30 years that's shown just how powerful the kind of learning that children do really is. The trouble is that the picture that comes from this new science, thinking about things like neuroscience and evolution, is really different from the kind of intuitive picture that's become prevalent in the past 30 years or so. And that's what I call this parenting as a verb picture. It's interesting, the word only appeared in the 1960s and only became popular in the 1970s. And that picture is that what we need to do as parents is something like what teachers do in school. It's a very kind of directive picture. And that's pretty much the opposite of the picture that comes out of all this exciting new scientific research.
And we'll get to some of that research in a little bit. But one of the points you make is that formal education, like classroom education, is actually really very new. And that for generations, kids were learning by watching their parents, mimicking their parents, maybe on a farm, for example. How much of what you now understand about kids learning and childcare even come from experiments with kids versus looking back at evolutionary developments about how kids learn?
Well, I think the two go hand in hand. So what we've discovered in the experiments is that even very young children, especially very young children, have these incredibly powerful evolved learning mechanisms. They learn from just looking, from interpreting what the people around them are doing. But in order to do that, they need to be in a kind of protected, safe setting with lots of resources and lots of love. That's really the evolutionary design. And what's happened is that the specific institution of school, which really only showed up in the 19th century to get people prepared to be in factories, has become our model for what learning is like. And the way that children, especially young children, spontaneously learn through observation and also notably through play, that seems less like learning to us. And it seems less like learning in the context of schools and preschools. And I think in the context of being a parent as well.
Parents, do you have thoughts on playing in preschool or at home? Or do you have questions for Allison Gopnik? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. This conversation about playing, do you think that the role of playing as a form of learning or teaching your children is appreciated?
Well, I think intuitively people feel like play is important for children. But what happens is when there's pressure both from parents and from policymakers to get specific outcomes that we can assess, play just kind of falls between the cracks because it's not obvious what play is doing. And in fact, when you look at the science, what play is doing is not teaching you to do anything in particular, the sort of thing that could show up on an academic test, say. What it does is allow you to be more flexible. It allows you to explore. It allows you to consider possibilities. And that's really the whole point of childhood. That's what childhood is all about.
Can you give us an example? Like, I'm thinking about when I would play kitchen in kindergarten. Like, is that like, what was I learning when I was playing in my pretend kitchen?
Well, we've actually done some studies that show that children, for instance, who pretend more are also better at thinking about hypotheticals, thinking not so much about what will happen, but what could happen. So, you know, what would happen if I had an imaginary friend who was a 6-foot tall purple dinosaur with spots? How would I interact with him? And that ability to think about possibilities, not just the things that we actually know, but think about all the things that could be, that's really distinctively human. It's one of our greatest advantages. And it's one of the things that we do the most in this protected, safe period of childhood. That's really the whole purpose of childhood.
That's really interesting. I have twin sisters, and they had they had imaginary friend mice, which is kind of weird. But they interacted with this imaginary mouse, both of them. They each had this imaginary, they interacted with him like as a mouse, not as a person. Like, he didn't sit at our table. So that's interesting. Okay, I think I want to go to a couple callers. We have Britta in Hell's Kitchen. Britta, you're on WNYC.
Hi. Yeah, I'm totally in favor of kids playing. I think that, you know, in especially New York City, where everything's so structured and rigorous, that play, you know, free play is kind of a harder thing to manage with parent schedules and stuff. But I'm specifically interested in asking you what you think about computer games and that form of play.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think everyone now is interested in what will happen what will happen as children are interacting with these new technologies. And the simple truth is we won't know for another 20 years until they grow up. But I think the past history of the human species should make us more hopeful than fearful, because what's happened always for human beings is that we've changed our technology. We've been a technological species from the very beginning. And each generation of children has learned how to manage both the good and bad sides of whatever the technology of their time was. I think what happens is we tend to think that the day before we were born was sort of Eden, and all the technology from that time isn't really technology. It's just, you know, the stuff of life. But the day after our children are born is basically Mad Max. Anything that happens after our children are born is a terrible threat from the future. So I think what will happen is that children will figure out how to deal with the technological developments of the future, just as they learned how to deal with printed books and film and all the other technological developments of the past. So I think there's a lot of unnecessary fear. On the other hand, children learn by taking on the values of their parents. So I think it makes sense for parents to say, look, I love books. Here's what's wonderful about books. And then the children will take that information and revise it and change it and reshape it and remix it into something that's never appeared before.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are on testing in schools. We just heard from the Education Commissioner, Mary Ellen Illia, about test scores. And you take, I imagine, an approach where you think that there should be more playing in schools as well, not just in homes.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially in the case of preschool, it's been frustrating for us developmental psychologists, because we've been trying to make the case for universal preschool for a long time. And it's fantastic that this is actually happening in places like New York. But the danger is that it's increasingly seen as being a way of taking K through 12 schools, which have their own problems, and extending them to the younger children. So the preschool teachers, who I think intuitively know that the way that children learn is through this kind of free exploration, are under pressure from parents and policymakers to be accountable, to do something that will lead to a particular outcome. There was a New York City mother who actually sued her children's preschool because the kids were playing. And from a developmental perspective, that's so sad. We know that children's play is actually not just the way they learn, but especially the way that they get these capacities for innovation and creativity, which of course are just the things that we need in the world that we live in now.
How does income level and class play into this discussion when it comes to early education?
Well, I think it's absolutely crucial. We can't say often enough that 20% of American children are growing up in poverty, and that number is going up, not down. So we have this kind of strange inequality where middle class and upper middle class families are spending literally billions of dollars on how-to books and apps and things that aren't really going to make very much difference for their children. And at the same time, a fifth of American children are growing up without the basics to provide the rich support system that we know is necessary for children to be able to explore. Growing up not just in poverty, but in isolation and without support. So we have this terrible kind of tension where we have some children who are upper middle class children who aren't exploring because they're so controlled, and then poor children who aren't exploring because they don't have a safe space to explore in.
Okay, and I want to go to another caller. We have Joelle in Brooklyn. Joelle, you're a parent?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for the very informative program. I do have a very basic question. Mm-hmm. I've been an educator for 52 years, and I know how important it is to have a stable family environment in order to maximize the learning experiences of young learners. But in a society where your job can be changed any moment, where mm-hmm. you have to learn new skills all the time, I find that it's very disquieting for a young learner to feel confident that he or she has a base on which to build the knowledge that they're getting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very challenging now because we recognize how important knowledge and information are. And there's tremendous pressure on children to achieve in an academic setting. And at the same time, we don't have the resources to provide children with a kind of safe base, which actually makes you confident about exploring. One of the things that's interesting that computer scientists talk about a difference between exploration and exploitation. And in a way, paradoxically, in order to be able to explore, you have to not be focused on particular goals. And I think there's more and more pressure on children to be focused on particular goals. And in terms of our society at large, we basically treat everything as if it's either a matter of production or consumption. So we treat having children as if it's either a very expensive luxury or a very badly paid job. We don't have a way, we don't have institutions for just providing care, which is the thing that we've done for as long as we've been a human species.
Okay. Allison, to what extent does the way that we raise children and teach children need to change with the times? I mean, the title of your book is The Gardener and the Carpenter, and you talk about the gardening style of parenting. Does that fit with the world we're in today where, you know, a lot of us are sitting behind computer screens when we grow up?
Yeah, I think it does. It's because it's a deeper point. The point of the gardener and the carpenter is the model that lots of people have about being a parent is it's like being a carpenter. You're trying to shape children to come out a particular way. And I think educators have that model sometimes too. And a better perspective from a scientific point of view is to think about the way that you create an ecosystem. You create a meadow, say, that's variable, unpredictable, does all sorts of unexpected things. That kind of system does better in situations of change. And for as long as we've been around as human beings, our trick has been dealing with unknown unknowns, dealing with variability, dealing with change. And that's more true now than it ever was.
All right. I think we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. I am Sarah Gonzalez. I'm a reporter at WNYC, and I've been filling in for Brian Lehr. I want to say thank you to our callers, and thanks again to my guest, Allison Gopnik, professor of psychology and an affiliate professor of philosophy at the University of California, Berkeley, and author of The Gardener and the Carpenter, What the New Science of Child Development Tells Us About the Relationship Between Parents and Children. I will be back tomorrow on The Brian Lehr Show. Thank you all for listening.